Ik ben... Goed, nu zal ik weer Engels praten. I speak English again. Sorry to confuse you. So, before we begin with a lecture by Gorkem Setin, I would like to talk about two more things that are here, or actually are across the street. El Pueblo de China is busy cooking dinner. And she started this morning, or actually she started this week, with digging a hole in a little in-between area in the Rue Saint-Marin, just across the street, to make a traditional Chilean dish. It contains 30 kilos of mussels. How on earth she found them, we still don't know, but they will be cooked in a ditch in the ground. But she will wire this ditch with sensors. So in the afternoon, we will be able to listen to the cooking process. And of course, at the end of the day, we're able to taste it. I think in the afternoon, at the lunch break, we'll be able to go there and have a look. I think it's interesting to see how this is coming along. So that's happening in the meantime. Also happening in the meantime, or present, is Isabel. She's embodying our video library. If you want to look at videos that she's carrying, just ask her. She has also portable DVD players and a little guide to explain you what's in her side pockets. So that's happening in the meantime. Now I would like to welcome Gorkem. I'm really happy he could be here today. Gorkem is an open source developer at the one hand, but also a usability expert. And it's interesting for us to have him here because he comes with these two perspectives. He traveled from Turkey here, where he works, amongst many other things, in the PARDES project, the national distribution the Turkish government is supporting and working on. And I think he will talk a bit about that, but I also hope he will talk a bit about the actual work of usability design and how this might be different in free software environments from proprietary environments. So, Gorkem.
Thanks, Femke, and thanks to everyone who made this conference a reality. Yeah, thank you. Okay, my presentation title is Open Source Software Usability. My name is Gorkem Çetin. I work for Turkish National Institute of Electronics and Cryptology, where we develop our own Linux distribution. Yeah, sure. Where we develop our own Linux distribution there, which is geared towards Turkish users with a focus of usability and user-centered design in mind. Before going further into my other slides, I would like to show you a video from Pixar, which is a company located in US specialized in graphics. So, watch carefully. You see, usability is not an issue, it's not a global issue, it's also a universal issue. I would like to ask you one question. What was the usability problem here that you have seen? The user interface of the management console, right? And what can you suggest in order to improve the user-centered design of that management console? If you can answer it, then I can call you a usability expert. Sorry? Yeah, all of them are the same. Maybe you can put some captions, maybe you can group some of the switches there, right? And what more? Sorry? Label them, yeah. Yeah, thank you. That was good. Okay, I would like to go on with my slides. And this is my agenda. First, I would like to talk about some in details about what usability is, what's the main definition of usability, and why do we need usability in our software. And then I would like to go on with open source, what is it, how do we use it, how do you use it, in fact, in your life? And I would like to go on to interaction patterns between usability experts. Sometimes I call them HCI or human-computer interaction experts. And then I would like to address issues with the interaction patterns between those two domains or groups. And if you have any questions, I would like to answer them right after my presentation. So, International Standards Organization defines usability like this, as you see. It is mainly effectiveness, efficiency, and satisfaction with which a specified set of users can achieve a specified set of tasks in a particular environment. And you define or measure usability in two ways. The first way is expert evaluation, in which you define how good an interface is, and then you assess the system according to the definition that you have put into. And in the second one, you just go with a user-centric model. You just measure the system with the end user, probably and mainly with a usability test. If you want more information and if you want to Google the internet with this, just check with or search Nielsen, Norman, Cockton, Prison, Carroll. These are five main persons in this area or domain. So why does it matter? So, and why do we need it? First of all, bad design costs money. It costs lots of money, really. Some analysis say that it costs 40% more than if you don't use or if you don't make usable tests in your software. If your application is not usable, then workers usually find it hard to use. Even they sometimes give up using it. They most probably need some support and training if they don't have or if they don't find the interface usable. There is an image in the left, right, I'm sorry, in the right corner of the screen. It says in Turkish, the firewall is successfully opened. So an end user can understand that so that the firewall is activated, but a developer, for example me, firewall opened means a firewall in fact is closed. This is a problem with the Windows, this is a problem with all of our software, it's a problem with the aliens. So we need usability, and usability matters because of these items. So what do users want? This is in fact a five-item description of what Nielsen defines for the usability. First, they want effectiveness. Effectiveness means the completeness and accuracy with which they achieve their goals. They need efficient user interfaces. Efficiency means the speed or the time to finish up with the task. They need engaging user interfaces, or that means they need to be satisfying, or they need to be pleasant while they work with the user interface. And they need error-tolerant interfaces. That means the user interface of the application needs to be error-tolerant or needs to prevent the problems that the user faces. And it has to be easy to learn. The user has to don't have to spend a lot of time learning the user interface. And I would like to talk about some tools and methods so that we use, so that we ensure the usability of a user interface. First, we make site visits. We make some observations in the user's domain or user's area. And we make surveys. Surveys are in form of questionnaires. We send those questionnaires to users and we want them to complete them. And we gather information, both qualitative and quantitative information. According to many people or many domain experts, 5 to 8 users is more than enough in order to make some sort of questionnaires. And focus groups is somehow similar to site visits. It's good for evaluating a focused group of users who are going to work with your application. It's usually informal. You just ask some questions and you receive their answers and you just write them on a piece of paper. But believe me, it's really a very effective and efficient way of doing some usability research. Prototyping, especially paper prototyping, is another effective way to use, to see how it fits to a mental model of your focused users. Heuristic evaluation, usually you see it this way, but we generally call it or try to call it expert evaluation, since it's, heuristic is an awkward definition. With heuristic evaluation, as an expert domain, as a domain expert, you just evaluate that particular interface against a defined set of guidelines, and you try to understand how that particular interface conforms to those guidelines. This is a very basic sample of paper prototyping. You see, you just need a pen and a paper to write down, and then you just sketch the user interface, and you just give that paper to the developer, and then you say that this type of interaction should be good for the end user. And then the developer makes the first sketch in digital form and then returns back to you, and you incrementally make the user interface perfect. Usability test is another form or method that we use in order to understand whether a given user interface conforms to our standards. There can be lots of different setups. For example, you can just use a table and a chair and a video camera in order to test your user. Or sometimes a usability test laboratory can include a one-way mirror, two rooms, lots of different setups, DV players, three cameras, one of them looking at at the user's monitor, one of them looking at the user's keyboard, and one of them looking at the face of the user. So it's basically camera-driven. It is basically done in a controlled environment. Usually, before the test, you give a questionnaire to your user so you understand the prior experience of that user. And after the usability test is done, you just give another questionnaire in order to understand the attitude or the behavior of that user. And then the data is gathered both in qualitative and quantitative forms, and you just tell the user, I'm trying to explain why qualitative data is gathered here. Before starting the usability test, you just tell your user to think aloud, okay? You don't want to stress him, you don't want to stop him not speaking. Just let him feel relaxed, and you just make him speak while he is in a usability test. So this is a photo of usability testing. You know, you see it's a very informal place. A girl trying to use an application. I think it's a kid's play or something like this. And another expert here trying to note down the behavior, the attitude of that girl. So, in fact, I am a fan of open source software. I have been using Linux since 1993, and I haven't looked back to other operating systems then. I am, in fact, more a developer than a user interface expert, but my PhD subject is user interface design and usability of open source software. Open source software can be referred to free and open source software, or free libre open source software, or free software. But these are almost the same, but there are some minor differences between interpreting them or interpreting their licenses. In fact, at home, probably you are using one of these open source software, including openoffice.org, including Firefox, which is in fact somehow treated as superior to other other browsers by some experts. Or you may be using databases, MP3 players, or some Linux distributions like this you see on the screen, like Ubuntu. And maybe you go to the hospital and you don't know, but they use free software in their system in order to maintain all the things inside the hospital. The thing is that here, the open source software has four main items, I mean, the four main features. You are free to download it. You are free to use it without any restrictions. You are free to modify it, and you are free to redistribute or resell it, either the modified form or unmodified form. So if you see those four features of an open source software, then you can understand that this is mainly an open source software or free software. First free software phenomenon started in 1980s with Richard Stallman, whose name you probably have heard of before. And those times, developer efforts are spent for technical applications targeted to scientists and not mainly to end users. Development of building blocks was necessary, so they have first built compilers, console applications, and some editors which run under a console. So these are mostly targeted to researchers and not end users. The first examples of integrated graphical user interfaces have been started to show on the internet in 1996, like 10 years ago. And end users started to demand more usable interfaces, more user-centric designs from the developers. I would like to talk about the particular aspects of open source software development before going further. It's developer-driven. That means developers traditionally make their software or develop their software for other developers and rather end users. And they are mainly feature-centric and not usability-centric. They tend to add features rather than fix usability bugs. And in most cases, in most projects, a usability adoption in the early phases of the project is not possible. And it is mainly or mostly hard, if not impossible, to delay the code from a project to increase usability because the well-written code is the honor of the open source software developer. So in two slides, I would like to tell you what happens in open source world. Novell, 3 years ago, started a usability testing facility in one of their laboratories. It is called Better Desktop. I mean, the name of the project is called Better Desktop. And also, you can go to betterdesktop.org in order to download more than 200 videos and see yourself how a typical usability testing is done in a controlled environment. In the videos, you will see the outputs of the three cameras, in which you can see the keyboard and the monitor and the face of the person who is tested. So if you want to know more about usability or usability testing of an open source software, I strongly suggest you to go there and download some videos and watch yourself. KDE and GNOME are two desktop environments that we use in our Linux desktop. You know, a Windows desktop is somehow static. You cannot very easily change it. But in Linux world, we have different types of desktops in which we two called KDE and GNOME. In fact, KDE has an active usability working group. in which they regularly meet in many parts of Europe. Many of those developers are from Germany, and they regularly provide usability reports to both end users, to both HCI experts, and also to other open source developers of KDE. GNOME, after the introduction of some microsystems support, started to build a very active team of usability experts, and they provided a human interface guideline, just like what they did in KDE. So both in KDE and GNOME, we have very specific guidelines that tells the user interface developer how to act while developing a user interface. There is a meritocracy inside the system in which we can call a layer system, that the more you contribute to the project, the more you can go up in the layer. So if you are an usability expert that has just entered the project, then you have to convince the other developers that in fact you are giving a valuable thing to the project. And I have made a survey lately, and I have asked the developers, what problems do you have, or what thoughts do you have regarding the usability? And they said that they believe time to market is slowed down with usability experts, and so the project delays. A developer is not the only decision maker in the hierarchy. So I asked to many developers, and they say that they are not the decision makers, so they cannot decide whether a user interface a HCI expert gives can be used in this particular application or not. The developer assumes that requirements for the new applications are always the same. So these are the issues that developers mainly face while developing a user interface. So I will give a very basic summary of what or how a user interface development takes place in both institutionalized software development and a free software type of development. First, in an institutionalized software development, or in a development mechanism where money talks, first they try to find the focus group, and then they try to identify the requirements, and then they identify the budget and include the early usable involvement, and then project starts. But it is in fact each in software development model, and just the developer starts coding the software without putting forward the user interface design, without defining the requirements of the project, and without knowing how user-centric development can really be, they can really benefit from user-centric development, and then project starts. Between a developer and HCI expert, the discussion model is like this. It's usually initiated and directed by the HCI expert. The progression is related to that expert's knowledge. So the greater the expert's knowledge is, the easier the conversation goes on. And also, if the complexity of the usability problem is a lot, then the conversation tends to be shorter. And it seldomly yields to an initiative to start a user interface refactoring. So I would like to talk about the problems that we face. First, the problems regarding quantity. Unfortunately, we are not so many people. In KDE project, there are 8 or 10 people. GNOME project, we have 5 or 10 people regarding the user interface design. And I personally know a total of 20 people, not more than this. And on the other hand, developers are everywhere. For example, in SourceForge, you probably have heard of this website where you just sign in and just send your project, and you start with your project, and there are more than 1 million and 800,000 developers and more than 160,000 projects. But not all projects have a user interface specialists associated with them. So please, not fair. There's no one-to-one correspondence between those two domains. The HCI experts are lacking, although the usability, the developers are a lot in number. And we have some financial problems also in this domain, in open source world. HCI experts, they need a good reason to join the open source world because they have to earn some money. Money, in fact, we don't speak about money for most of the projects in open source world, so they have to be, they need to be motivated in order to force them to put some input into the project. And there are some issues with the aim and focus. Two domains do not have the same focus. Developers are a free form, and they, as I said before, focus on features rather than the usability. I have seen that of the top 50 SourceForge projects, only 3 of them mentions usability in their aim and vision, and the rest 47 do not know or do not mention that word. Documentation are written the usability people way. Release is done quite early and quite often, and this is sometimes not suitable for HCI experts because they need some time in order to refactor the user interface before going on, and this is sometimes disliked by developers. And you know, open source software development model is asynchronous, and it is a distributed development way. Many of the HCI experts do not know this phenomenon, and since they don't know, they sometimes wait for answers to their questions, and this sometimes, as in your example, sometimes 8 days is not very, it's a very long day in order to get an answer from a developer. So these are the working items that I have faced up to now. First, you have to know your developer. You have to meet him physically. You have to know him physically. Ordering them beer and pizza really works, believe me. Establish a direct communication and talk to them directly that some problems occur in that particular user interface. If you have a separate mailing list that that only contains the user interface centric discussions, it would be very, very nice. If you have a bug reporting tool, I mean that project has a bug reporting mechanism, then there should be a usability section in that particular bug reporting tool. Just engage in physical meetings, as I said before, know your developer. Show them that you are the authority by showing that you don't only know how a user interface design should be made, but also you can send them some patches, some software patches, and then you get you get their respect. In Ubuntu, which is a Linux distribution, each project needs to have a use case. A use case means it's an entrance to user-centric design, and without a use case, no projects are allowed to go further. So in Ubuntu, the user interface designers, the accessibility experts, HCI experts are in fact a part of the project, and they are not separate people, they are not separate from the other developers. What doesn't work? Just telling that a particular piece of user interface doesn't work or it is hard to use, etc. This never have worked before and will not work in the future either. So acting is necessary. An active contribution is necessary. Giving some patches is necessary. Also, sending some bug reports in the bug list or bug reporting tool is very necessary. So, in fact, keep in mind that developers think that usability bugs are not real bugs, but change their minds, because usability bugs are real bugs, by sending them some bug reports so that some particular user, in fact, cannot use their own application. So we need a good open source media which enables collaboration and communication of online HCI experts. We are lacking such an application now. We are lacking an application in which we can share our resources, in which we can share our prototypes, in which we can share our videos or usability testing videos or like that. Currently, if you go to YouTube, for example, if you search for usability and tests, you can see many videos there. YouTube and Flickr are starting to become a media, a central media, to upload some videos, some tests, it becomes a media for discussing the usability issues of a particular application. So, one way to get the usability experts into open source projects is to make the developers more aware of the basic usability principles. So we need to train them by giving some lectures, by talking in the seminars. If this could ever be done, then the developers become usability experts, and they have the ability to evaluate their own applications. And there will be mutual understanding of those through two groups. I'm not saying that there is no mutual understanding, but it will be better and stronger. And a usability expert will be able to show the user's perspectives and focus on user profiles, finally defining the target groups. I have seen that many of the project leaders can verbally define their target groups, but they do not explicitly write it in their own web pages. So this causes also problems. As I have said, there is a lack of key components, the usability bug reporting tool that can be used to submit, to evaluate the videos and audios and the photos of the user interface. And we have lack of usability reports. There are some reports in KD and GNOME, but in fact they are low in quantity. We have lack of usability laboratories, which is in fact hard to get or gain or build because of the price considerations. And we have a lack of usability experts and companies who are specialized in open source software and who know that open source domain, who are knowledgeable in open source domain. So these are some links of interest. The links were in fact quite long, but I wanted to shorten them by tinyurl.com. If you like to take notes, just you can do it now. At the end, you can see the Pixar's lifted video. It's on Meta Cafe. And also, I would like to show you one more video now. The Better Desktop link is on betterdesktop.org. And you can see some photographs in No Ideas But Things URL also, that those photographs are geared towards usability, which is taken in different cities of Europe with some comments under them. Okay, let me show you another video. It's a video of the navigation system of IBM. I think 7. No, not IBM, sorry. It's BMW, it's written wrong there. I think BMW 740i or something like this. It's a pricey car.
The iDrive drive system on your 645 CI consists of the control display, the control and menu and voice command buttons. It conveniently groups together a large number of vehicle functions in one place. Here's a general overview of how the system operates. For specific descriptions, please refer to your owner's manual. The iDrive control display shows a series of menus that are accessed through the controller and menu button. When the system...
Please bear in mind that you are going to use this system when the car goes 150 km per hour.
First comes on, you see this message. Confirm by pressing down on the controller. Then, this main menu is displayed. Access any of the five main menu items by moving the controller forwards for communications, backwards for entertainment, left for climate, right for navigation, and down for the iMenu, which contains a variety of vehicle settings and maintenance information. To navigate within a menu, turn the controller to scroll through the choices and push down to enter. To change the current field, move the controller as appropriate. To back up to the main menu, press the menu button. At the bottom of the control display, a variety of information is available, such as climate, entertainment, and communication status.
And then you will find yourself crashed to a tree somehow. Okay, if I would like to show you the links again, it can be on the screen, yes. If you have any questions, I'd like to answer them.
No, well, I was just curious, I mean, also connecting with what Femke was showing, if that was happening more and more. I mean, you mentioned YouTube and video in general, but also screencasts, are those becoming actually more used, I think, also professionally? I mean, screencasts of actual users, I think, or that's, yeah, indeed, this example of someone making a screencast to sort of demonstrate their software, I found quite compelling, and I think must be happening more and more. Do you see them and use them in your evaluations?
Yes, because the more screencasts a developer sees, the more convincing it becomes. And Better Desktop is doing that exactly. They put the screencasts on the web page, and then you can just download it and see the problems on the interface. Otherwise, just telling in an email that a specific problem exists in a user interface may not work if you don't order them a pizza and beer, you know.
You said that one of the problem was that, you know, I don't like the word expert, but usability experts cannot have hard to be involved in free software because of money or time or whatever. But I think the developers are doing it whether on job base or during their student time or spare time. So I don't really understand why it's not possible for usability experts to do it.
Well, it doesn't mean that they strictly do not get involved in a project. They really get involved in a project, but the more the usability expert wastes time with what he is doing, for example, a usability test, it becomes more and more not possible for him or her to get deeply involved in the process. For example, a usability test really needs money. If you want to test 8 people, you have to spend 1 full week in order to evaluate the user interface with that 8 persons. I mean, that money starts to talk there, but according to your example, you have given some nice examples about where money is not an issue, where you can just spend your 2 or 3 hours in order to fix a user interface. So it sometimes money is the is an item that should be considered, and sometimes not.
Developers are students. For example, some developers are students, and it's included in their you know, learning time. So it could be also for you know, designers or.
Yeah, that's perfectly possible. There is an article, if you want to search Google, which is called Student Run Usability Tests. You can learn the behavior of the students when they want to, when they go into a usability test. Okay, you can sometimes don't pay them money, and you can just convince them to take part in a usability test. But after some time, for example, you can use the first year students, but you may not be able to use the fourth year or students or MS students in this project. And then you started to spend some money on this. This is because I told that the money is an issue, it's a problem, it's an item that we have to solve in usable tests.
I wanted to, well, you paint quite a bleak picture of, let's say, the possibilities of, sorry.
Dichterbij.
Quite a bleak picture of how usability is integrated or the future of usability in free software development. And I was wondering why, let's say, it seems that because the sort of landscape you sketch seems to mimic a kind of development that we know from proprietary software. So I was wondering whether there was any, let's say, potential of doing it differently. I mean, I think the uploading of screencasts, later on today we'll speak to someone from InGIMP who's done public tracing of movements of people through the image editing program GIMP, and therefore allowing other ways of interacting with software and thinking about software. Do you see, let's say, specific for free software, other kinds of usability opportunities opening?
So are you asking me whether there are some methods or whether there are some ways that I haven't mentioned here that can be used to leverage the usability of open source software?
Well, I mean, if you talk about free software, then use, to my mind, gets defined in another way, and user as well. So then I think also the, let's say, the mental map of what usability is might be a bit different than when you talk about Apple software or Windows software, because there's another relation of users to what they use. There's another reason why they use it than when you would use any software at work or whatever. So I was wondering whether that is changing the way you approach usability research.
A usability research is a usability research. It doesn't differ from one particular application to another. It doesn't differ whether that application is open source software or not. It doesn't differ to, I mean, it doesn't differ with the your focus group. I mean, your focus group is always the same. Your focus group doesn't change from one application to another. Your focus group sometimes may be more developer-centric or more expert-centric if they use open source software, but it's, we have seen that it's basically the same in those two domains.
More questions?
To follow on from the previous points, probably a lot of people here, we would kind of wish to hear that the open source software was more democratic, that there was some other route. But I got the impression from what you said that the fact that it's more developer-led, you feel, almost makes it more hierarchical than the more commercial, corporate kind of product. Do you think that is the case?
Right.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Yeah, probably it's not what we would like to hear, but it's very interesting if it's true.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Thank you.
Any more questions?
No.
Yes?
Who's going to hold the microphone now?
I think we can do that, no?
Well, the papers were very different in the way they approached the issue of using software in some ways. And I wanted to ask perhaps both of you to reflect on the different ideas of using software that were in the papers, and to just make the contrast between them. Because Femke was really, in some ways, anti-user interfaces, graphic user interfaces. She said at some point that, I can't remember exactly what you said, but you're in favor of dismantling or opening the user interface in various ways. And I understood your discussion of recipes and lists and methods of working with materials as offering a different way of working with software. When you asked your question, can you cook with software, I thought you were asking us to think about different ideas of what it would mean to work with these materials. So perhaps either of you, could you say something about the different, perhaps Gorkim, what you thought of Femke's idea of working with software?
What's your particular question? I didn't get it. I'm sorry.
It's not really a question. It's a question in some ways to ask you to compare the different ideas of using software that were in the papers. It's perhaps too vague, too complicated.
No, I mean, I think maybe I have an idea in my head that maybe is a translation of that, which is to say, I mean, I'm a developer who indeed works a lot of times with like command line tools, let's say. So I mean, a very kind of one way of saying it is, you know, is there a difference between usability testing on a command line tool versus a GUI? But there's something, not just a technical point there, but I think also a bit, and correct me if I'm wrong, but there's something also about, yeah, I mean, a command line tool to me, or what's interesting about it, is that it's very open-ended and it's using language, and in that way allows, you know, isn't scripting me, but I'm scripting it. And usability testing traditionally often has that kind of quality of kind of scripting the user, or you know, determining things in such a particular way. So I don't know. Yeah, is there? I mean, so one kind of question could be: I mean, do you usability test command line software, and how does that work, or is that an issue?
Are you asking whether we have done some usability tests that assesses the command line interface of a
for instance,
player?
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
Never. We haven't done it yet.
And would it be possible? I mean, I think that's kind of the, because how could you maybe test something and that allowed for a kind of openness, I think, of use?
Yes, this is possible, because not all the command line interface of applications are for developers. Some of them are for end users also. And I haven't seen any research which assesses the usability of a command line of a program, but that is, I think, that would be a nice research.
Well, and of course, I mean, in an open source, that line is often, you know, soft. The kind of, you go between developing, scripting, using. So yeah,
yes, it's still many Linux distributions. In many Linux distributions, you need a command line interface in order to complete some of the tasks. For example, Femke has just written down some code, employer, blah, blah, something, and she has to enter, and then employer or VS shows off. But Femke is not a developer, she's an end user. I mean, so we need to test whether the command line interface of employer is okay with you. Yeah, I'm here tomorrow, so we can...
No, I'm not for or against graphical user interface. what is exciting for me to see in the usability discussions, in the difference between GNOME and KDE, in seeing the different desktops develop and also their sort of communities of use around it, is that each of them offers another way of looking sometimes at the same objects, and this is another way of understanding what you're dealing with. So when I say I'm looking for interfaces that do not flow like water, it's because it's interesting actually the kind of breaks between the different perspectives. And I know that most usability models are about consistency, that's the kind of ultimate goal of what you should achieve. When it's consistent, complete consistency is a goal achieved. So this is why I think it's important to think, about the potential of free software, of producing another kind of ecology of use and another kind of ecology of user interface, which might be more diverse and more, let's say, have more different approaches connected than growing towards one way of interacting with your machine. So I'm looking for a way in to think with people that are in the work of doing this, to think about how you could then go up one level and think about usabilities, maybe, of or interfaces, because I think actually by being able to move between interfaces, you might understand what you're doing better, and I think then also the experience of use becomes more interesting and therefore more transparent, so you want, or more useful.
This, in fact, reminds me of something. There have been some usability tests that is done with end users. The first test was done with interface that mimics the Windows environment, but it was a Linux machine. And the usable test was, I mean, the test results were very positive. And the only changing thing was the colors and the icons and the very, very basic elements of the user interface. And then the same test was done again with another group of test subjects. And the interface this time didn't mimic Microsoft Windows. And the interface was a very basic interface of what you see in KDE or GNOME. And the usability test results were, I mean, the satisfaction, the efficiency and the effectiveness of the users were found lower than the first one, although only the colors and icons and very minor elements have changed. So with usability, we sometimes mean we sometimes have to consider the previous experience of that particular user, especially when he or she is migrating from a previous operating system to Linux. So we have to conquer the world. I mean, as Linus Torvalds says, the creator of the Linux, we have to conquer the world by starting with the elementary school, where the students haven't yet the time to see other user interfaces, I mean, other closed operating systems. Then it is really very easy to let them use the user interface of Linux.
Okay. So, I think we will. You have an.
From this morning, what I'm really interested in the idea of the cookbook and the recipe, because sometimes you, when you're looking how to do something with a computer, you have different kind of recipes that you can find, and sometimes you just miss something, just as like when you try to cook something. For example, I gave an Apple computer to my mother because I thought the interface is simple and everything. And I have written down how to do to send an email, a paper for us. But my mother used to work with a computer when she had to put commands. She was working in an hospital, so she knew how to put, like, with F12, you do something. And so she didn't know how to use the mice. So I didn't know, she could not understand how to click. And so I have all these recipes that I gave to her, but it was exactly when, exactly the same thing that when you have a recipe for cooking and they say you should use butter to do something, but they don't say if the butter is just cold, like you take it out of the fridge, or it must be softened a little. It's just exactly the same thing. So I think this thing about usability, even if sometimes the interface is really good, it's not enough. You have to have like detailed recipes sometimes. So I like this idea, so just to say.
Okay, we stop here. We can definitely talk more later. You take over now? Yes.
Donc, non, si je passe en français? Oui. Donc, on va s'arrêter maintenant, on reprend dans une heure à 14h15 avec Simon Aquet et Sabine Procoris. Et entre-temps, vous allez pouvoir et vous réchauffer et manger. So, we stop now for 1 hour and then you can eat and we will open the heating also. So, heat and heat. Thank you, Gorkem.